Welcome to Rashbam on Bereshit, a Mechon Hadar podcast. This is Rabbi Ethan Tucker. With this segment, we will close our investigation of Rashbam on Bereshit with three comments from Parshat Vayechi. Bereshit 48, verse 22, is a difficult verse. Yaakov, near death, tells Yosef that he has granted him Shechem Achad over his brothers, which he took from the Amorites with his sword and his bow. There are two main problems in the verse. A. What is the exact meaning of Shechem Achad? And B. When did Yaakov engage in a military battle with the indigenous Canaanite tribes? Rashi already engaged with these questions and offered two main possibilities. First, the term Shechem Achad could refer to the city of Shechem, which in fact became the burial spot for Yosef's bones. You can see the end of the book of Joshua for that fact. And the military reference here represents an extra-biblical account of Yaakov's military defense of his clan after Shimon and Levi's unwarranted slaughter of the people of Shechem. This is a forced accounting of Yaakov's claim to have captured the city with military might. Rashi thus offers a second possibility, which is that Yaakov here is talking about giving Yosef a double portion, where Shechem refers to some kind of stake. You can see Tehillim 21, verse 13, or chapter 60, verse 8, Hosea chapter 6, verse 9, and Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 9, for some roughly parallel usages of the word Shechem. The military conquest described here is metaphorical, and actually refers to prayers and wisdom that were employed to secure Yosef this more prominent status by obtaining the birthright from Esav, who is here described as an Amorite because of his wicked acts. Rashbam tries to get the benefits of both explanations by asserting that we are dealing with a double portion of inheritance and a military conquest, but that said conquest is in the future, and Yaakov is merely prophesying regarding its eventual fulfillment. I would like to suggest another reading that may in fact clear up what is happening in this verse. Professor Baruch Schwartz has argued that Bereshit 34 reflects a complex and multifaceted narrative of Yaakov's relationship with Shechem. On the one hand, there are elements in the story that seem clear that Dinah was raped by Hamor, the prince of Shechem, that Shimon and Levi exacted vicious revenge for this act, freed Dinah, and were then condemned by Yaakov, who feared for his life, claiming that they had put him at risk by attacking the much larger and more powerful indigenous population. On the other hand, there are elements that suggest that a more timid Shechem falls in love with Dinah and asks for her hand in marriage. The brothers, not just Shimon and Levi, seemingly with Yaakov's approval, hatch a plot to what they perceive to be a plan to be overwhelmed culturally through intermarriage. They demand all men be circumcised, and then they slaughter them. This ruse works, and the young clan's distinctiveness is preserved. As noted, these elements of the story seem to presume Yaakov's passive, if not even active, assent to the proceedings. Against that backdrop, we can see our scene here as amplifying the elements that reflect Yaakov's participation in the conquest of Shechem. In a lovely play on words, Yaakov says to Yosef, "I have given you a leg up in the form of the city of Shechem on your brothers, which I took from the Amorites with my sword and my bow." In other words, I, Yaakov, acting through my children, fought a battle to win the city of Shechem, and have given it to you as an inheritance. In this way, one can maintain what seems an obvious allusion to the actual city of Shechem, along with a biblical narrative that suggests some form of military involvement by Yaakov. To be sure, Yaakov's condemnation of that attack finds echoes in our parasha as well, when Shimon and Levi are singled out in chapter 49 as being unable to control their violence and therefore unfit to hold inheritable land. But perhaps this reading builds on Rashbam's instincts to want to include both aspects of the word Shechem, that the pshat of Shechem clearly refers to both the city and to some added portion being bequeathed to Yosef, but going beyond the linear literary reading usually preferred by Rashbam, we can branch out perhaps into a more multidimensional one that nonetheless achieves what he was reaching for. Moving on to the poetic blessings offered by Yaakov to his 12 sons in this parasha, one of the things that every beginning student of Tanakh learns is the importance of parallelism in biblical poetry. Many verses are arranged according to a parallel structure, A and then B, where the first part, A, essentially means the same thing as the second part, B. This then becomes an extremely powerful tool for deciphering difficult words in poetic passages, provided they are used in parallel with more common terms. As we've seen before, Rashbam is among the pioneering voices developing these sorts of theories about biblical literature. He uses the term kefel lashon, literally double language, to describe this parallelism, and uses it here to great effect. In Bereshit 49, verse 23, Yaakov says of Yosef, Vayamareruhu varobu, vayistemuhu ba'alei chitzim. Vayamareruhu clearly refers to some kind of embitterment, bitterness, like the word maror. Vayistemuhu refers to some kind of hatred. Vayistom Esav et Yaakov. We are told that Esav had that kind of hatred and resentment for Yaakov. And Ba'alei Chitzim are quite plainly those who are masters of or artisans of arrows. The word varobu in this verse is obscure. The temptation is to see it as describing miriva, some sort of tension or fight, such that Yosef's adversaries, using their arrows, are described as dealing with him bitterly, fighting with him and resenting him. Rashbam notes that the dagesh, the dot in the bet, votes against this reading, since the plural third-person past tense of fighting would be vocalized varavu, not varobu. But what really forecloses this interpretation for him is the principle of kefel lashon, biblical parallelism. Once we realize that the first and second parts of this verse are parallel, we realize that varobu is likely synonymous with ba'alei chitzim. It thus must refer to shooting arrows, which then calls to mind Job 16, chapter 13, where we find the same root referring to archers surrounding their victim. This sort of lexical problem-solving is at the heart of Rashbam's work, and comments like this one show how effective it can be in elucidating pshat. Incidentally, and perhaps somewhat depressingly for the less learned among us, it also demonstrates how the vast knowledge of Tanakh, before concordances and other kinds of indices, were so critical for Rashbam's interpretive apparatus, and how freely he could reach from one part of the Bible to another to solve these sorts of problems. Finally, we turn to Bereshit 49, verse 9, where Rashbam shows us the usefulness of cantillation in deciphering the meaning of verses. The verse here reads, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, Miteref Bini Alita, Kara Ravatz Ke Aryeh Uchelavi Mi Yekimenu. But more important, the verse is sung as follows, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, Miteref Bini Alita, Kara Ravatz Ke Aryeh Uchelavi Mi Yekimenu. The verse has four parts. The first, Yehuda is a young lion, a lion cub, Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Second, the phrase, Miteref Bini Alita, to which we will return. Three, Kara Ravatz Ke Aryeh, he crouches and lies in wait like a lion. Four, Uchelavi Mi Yekimenu, like the king of beasts, who can rouse him? The precise meaning of part two, Miteref Bini Alita, is discussed by Rashbam. Rashi had explained this verse to refer to Yehuda's withdrawal from the plot to kill Yosef, picking up on the verb tet resh peh, which is used in conjunction with Yosef's feigned death, tarof toraf Yosef. The brothers tell Yaakov, Yosef has been torn apart. Rashi explains that Yehuda here is singled out for doing what he could to fend off Yosef's murder, namely by proposing that they sell him to the Ishmaelites. To read the verse this way, the word teref must be joined to the word bini, in that Yehuda is said to have risen above, alita, the potential murder of my son, teref bini. Yehuda, says Yaakov in this reading, miteref bini, from the murder of my son, alita, you rose and rose above. Rashbam pounces. A close look at the notes reveals that the word miteref is matched with the note tipcha, which belongs to the class of notes that end phrases. That means that miteref is in fact separate from the word bini, and the phrase must be parsed as follows. My son, bini, you have risen up, alita, from your prey, miteref. Were Rashi to be right, there would have had to be some other appropriate note on miteref to indicate its connection with the word bini. Here you can hear it in the music. The way the verse would have to be vocalized for Rashi would be as follows. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, miteref bini alita. But instead it is Gur Aryeh Yehuda, miteref bini alita. Rashbam continues. The principle of kefel lashon of biblical parallelism further confirms that this phrase ought to be conveying the same basic content as part one, which describes Yehuda as a lion cub, and thus is merely a praiseworthy comment about Yehuda's power and dominion over his enemies. Rashi, Rashbam's grandfather, is anonymously criticized here with some force, at simply not understanding how cantillation plays into the meaning of the verse. V'hamefarsho b'mechirat Yosef, anyone who would explain this verse regarding the selling of Yosef, lo yada b'shita shel pasuk velo b'chiluk ta'amim klal, is completely ignorant of the ways in which verses are divided up and the ways in which notes divide them. Attacks of this sort, where Rashbam reveals a general hostility to any interpretation that is overly associative and thematic, as opposed to attending the needs of the context at hand, can be found in numerous other places. Chapter 49, verse 16 is another example in our parasha here. But I encourage you, as you go through other parts of his commentary, to look for the kind of acerbic tone that sometimes accompanies a enthusiast of Pshat like Rashbam. Thank you for joining me on this journey of learning. I encourage you to return for many other Mechon Hadar podcasts. If you are ever in the New York area, to come and visit us at Yeshivat Hadar, and to make Torah a regular and inspiring part of your life.